Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
Welcome back. We'll go around the room here and say our names. I'm George.
I'm Grisha.
My name is Kristen.
I'm Greg.
I'm Jack.
Hi, I'm Mark.
Jim.
Tim.
Stephen.
I'm Brad.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. I'm going to introduce our speaker. Her name is Dorothy Hunt. Dorothy Hunt serves as spiritual director of Moon Mountain Sangha and was the founder of the San Francisco Center for Meditation and Psychotherapy. She's the author of Only This, Leaves from Moon Mountain, and Ending the Search from Spiritual Ambition to the Heart of Awareness, as well as articles published on non-dual wisdom and psychotherapy. She teaches at the request and in the spiritual lineage of Adya Shanti, who invited her to share the Dharma in 2004. Dorothy has a long and deep connection to the teachings of Ramana Maharshi and non-dual teachings of Zen, Advaita, and Christian mystics. She invites a deep welcoming of the human expressions of the mystery. A licensed psychotherapist since 1967, Dorothy has now retired from her private practice. She's a mother, a grandmother, and for more information, please visit Dorothy at dorothyhunt.org or Dorothy Hunt Moon Mountain Sangha on YouTube. Welcome, Dorothy Hunt.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Good morning, everyone. It's always been a lovely thing to share a Sunday morning with you from time to time. So I see a few faces that I recall from previous times with you all and quite a few that are new to me. So I hope we have a chance to chat at least with some of you at the end of this talk. So I guess the first question I might ask is, when you were sitting Zazen a minute ago, Shikantaza, just sitting, were you aware that something was perceiving every moment? That something noticed if the mind was quiet or if the mind was busy, if a feeling arose or a sensation came, something already knew what the temperature of the room felt like on your skin, how it felt to be sitting, something already awake and aware in you before we try to become awake. And so Zazen is a way that we can become more and more awake and aware of that which is already awake. We can become aware that something's already quiet before we try to become quiet. That something's already at peace, really, before we try to become peaceful. So Zazen is a word, as you probably know, that comes from the Chinese Chan, that comes from the Sanskrit Dhyana. And I read, I don't know Chinese, but I read that the character for Zazen in Chinese, the ideogram, is two figures sitting on the earth facing each other. And for me, there's that sense of Zazen is something that we do together, not just together this morning in Gay Buddhist Fellowship meeting, but we do with beings everywhere, with all beings. It's a time and a place to open to the whole universe, because we're actually seeing, experiencing wholeness from wholeness within ourselves, in that dimension of ourselves. So Yesterday, I have to tell you this story, because yesterday I went for a walk to a park. I was sitting on a park bench, and this little boy came running to a tree that was almost directly in front of where I was sitting. And he must have been about 6 or 7. He was just a little guy. He was carrying in one arm a stuffed moose and in the other a stuffed panda bear. And he ran up to the tree and he very carefully, very gently put the moose in one corner of a branch and the stuffed panda bear in another branch of the tree, just very gently perching them in the tree. And then he sat down in front of the tree like this with his eyes closed. It was the sweetest moment. And then his parents, who had been walking some behind him, came, and his mother said, as she's getting out her iPhone to try to take a picture of this incredibly darling scene, she says, "Are you meditating?" And the minute she said that word, he jumped up and he took his animals and he ran off. And it just felt like it was such a great example of the minute we put a word to something, it's not that anymore. Do you know? I can use the word rose, and you might have a memory of a rose, but you won't have the smell, you won't have the vivid color, you won't have a direct experience of anything through the word, whether it's meditation, whether it's water, whether it's the name of someone you know, John or James or Gary or whomever. Do you know, the name of anything is already a step back from it. And so often we're going through the world, you know, we see thousands of things every day, you know. We look at all kinds of colors and shapes and forms and movement and emotion and thought and so forth and so on, but mostly we're looking and not really seeing. So this morning I really want to talk about the realm of true seeing. And I want to draw our attention to a couple of Zen koans that to me have to do with this realm of true seeing. You know, you've heard the word kensho, which is this opening glimpse of our true nature, or maybe more than just a glimpse. But, you know, ken means to see, to open one's eyes to, and show is essence. So to open one's eyes to essence is not to deny the particularities. It's not to deny our uniqueness. It's to see from that sense of essence, which is not divided. It's not, it's a whole. It's not a me seeing a you. It's this seeing itself, we could say. And what is this? You know, we can call it all kinds of names. God, Buddha, nature, Christ consciousness, truth, on and on. But the word is not it, obviously. So we're invited to discover what our own deepest dimension of being is. And to see more and more from that is not to see dividedly. It's to see without having to know. Of course, words and concepts will be here. You know, it's lovely. We're using them right now to communicate with each other. But when you really see something, it's like I might say, to see is to be. It's to be what you truly are, is to know, which is not an intellectual knowing. It's a knowing from direct experience. And eventually it leads to love, because it's all a continuum. This that we are appears to actually love its own creations, its own particular and in infinite expressions, moment to moment, in your life, in your daily life, in all of our daily life. It's right here, and there's a deep transformation that begins to happen when you see, not to, but you see from the seeing that sees things whole, that sees things in unity. You know, we have two eyes, right? And you might imagine that one way of seeing is the absolute, Buddha nature, emptiness, this that's simply awake, empty of self, empty of definition. The other is relative. It sees the particulars. It sees the uniqueness of each moment, of each form and so forth. And when they're seeing together, there's just a single image. It's not a seer and a seen. It's just what is. In every conceivable way, just what is, without additions. Now, the mind will put on the additions, right? Our conditioned mind, you know, it likes to analyze and remember and judge and like and dislike and decide something's good or bad and so forth and so on. I mean, that's just the movement of conditioned mind. But this that sees clearly sees it as conditioned mind and not as the truth of a moment or the truth of a thing. So in the Heart Sutra, when we read, form is exactly emptiness, emptiness exactly form. This is what those words are pointing to. This seeing that doesn't divide. Do you know, a lot of teachings will say, oh, your thoughts and feelings are just like clouds passing the sky, but you are the sky of awareness, and these are just passing through. Don't pay any attention to them. And that's useful as far as it goes. But there's a more mature way of seeing, in my opinion, spiritually speaking, that the clouds and the sky are not separate. They're not two different things. They arise together. There's nothing in your experience from the time you were born, actually before you were born, till, you know, the end of your life in this particular form, that you would know if you weren't awake, if you weren't aware, you know. So we're looking for something that we think is out there, something that we'll attain if we just do things right, if we just sit enough or read the right books or have the right teacher. But we miss turning our looking back to who or what is seeing, who or what is listening when we're listening. So true seeing is seeing from this that is empty of separation, empty of self, empty of definition. And yet there's an incredible appreciation for the moment as it is, because it's an expression of this that we all are. If we look deeply enough into that question, who or what am I? And we recognize that thinking doesn't see. We think our thoughts are so true and so accurate and we're right and they're wrong and so forth. But thinking is something that's seen by that which is perceiving life through you. So there's a koan that Zen Master Zhaozi, and of course you don't talk about a koan if you're, you know, it's something to contemplate. It's something to allow to seep in. But this one goes, the eye, E-Y-E, the eye that grasps the universe is so perceptive that it does not miss a single thread. The eye that grasps, and we're not talking about grasping in terms of holding onto something. It's the eye that sees the universe, the eye that understands the universe from this deeper dimension that we're pointing to. We can't really speak about it, but you can discover it. You can experience something. It can reveal itself. So the eye that grasps the universe is so perceptive, it doesn't miss a single thread. Now, if you take yourself to be a separate being, you are definitely unique. You are definitely have an individual life. You know, I'm not you, you're not me, and so forth and so on. But that which perceives through us, that which is awake in us, is that really something separate? Or is it something that we share? Is it something that we share with this self-aware universe? When I look, I'm looking out a window right now, and there are some trees right outside this window. Do you know there's something that perceives those trees? Those trees appear in the emptiness of vision. Do you know? Is this that's aware of the tree ever separate from the tree? In my experience, no, it can't be. It can't be. And in that sense, the world is always happening inside you. We think there's an outside and an inside. And of course, it's handy to be able to divide things that way to talk about it. But actually, everything is inside. You know, it's all an inside job. We could say it's an inside job. And when we're seeing from this dimension I'm pointing to, it actually just dissolves division. And even if we only have a moment where we experience that, there's something that resonates. And often it's a profound sense. And we've all had it. It's not like, oh, maybe someday I'll have that experience. You've all had moments where you lost a belief, although you wouldn't call it that way. You lost a belief in your being a separate somebody. You might have been running. You might have been dancing. You might have been listening to music. And something was so absorbed, so at one. The being was being that moment, you know, without this filter of conditioned mind, liking, disliking, analyzing, judging, so forth and so on. So all of those things that the mind does, we're not making those wrong. It's just to know that there's a limitation there. And there's a way of seeing that can be free of those limitations. And we can practice it, actually. And so I'd like to invite you to have a little experiential here with me around what I'm talking about. And so I'd like to invite you to look at any object in the room in your normal way of looking. You know, it could be your hand, it could be the carpet, it could be the, you know, the brick wall that you're seeing in the place on Bartlett Street or the statue or whatever. And just let yourself see it in your normal way, which might include, you know, describing or having a mental commentary, whether you like it or not liking. You're just looking in kind of your normal way, which for most of us tends to be conceptual. And we name it. I'm looking at a flower. I'm looking at this. So just become aware of your normal way of looking, which often is a superficial way of looking. And now I want to invite you to see that same object in a very concentrated way, using your whole body and mind, using all of your senses. And just keep seeing this object in its particularity, in its detail. And as you concentrate your mind on the object, you may discover that your mind becomes a bit quieter. And whatever it is you're looking at may begin to reveal some subtleties that you hadn't noticed. Some dimensions that before were a bit hidden to you. And you may even begin to feel a resonance with this object that you're seeing. Even some energetic connection. Now, none of these things are things that you have to be experiencing, but I'm just saying these are things that might happen when you give your whole body and mind to any moment, any object, any person, any form. Whole body and mind. So it's a direct encounter, but not with thought, but with the openness of your awareness. And just, you know, just play a little with going out to the object, like the experience of seeing that goes out to what is seen, and what it's like to actually just allow that object to come toward you, to be revealed, to come into your scene, as opposed to going out and grabbing it. Doesn't make one right or wrong. Just play a little bit with the movement of seeing So in these first two ways of looking, there's probably the experience that you, whoever you take yourself to be, you have been seeing. But now I want to invite you, and perhaps it's already happened for some of you, but I want to invite you to continue to look, continue to see, but now be the seeing. Not the one who is seeing, but just be the seeing itself. No one's doing it. And to the extent you can get a feel for being the seeing, what do you notice? Where do you feel the greatest intimacy? Dogen said, seeing form with the whole body and mind, hearing sounds with the whole body and mind, one understands it intimately. So this way of seeing is a very intimate seeing. And maybe some of you have a taste of it. Or maybe not, that's all right too. So maybe we just stop for a moment here if any of you, you know, are moved to share a bit of your experience. And this was a pretty quick exercise, but possibly you had a shift between looking superficially and actually seeing more deeply. Anybody?
Yes, thank you so much. You made me think about and understand better. When I go walking with a neighbor of mine in the neighborhood, they're usually not long walks. Many of the houses have these incredibly beautiful succulents in their garden. And when we pass one where the succulent is just seemingly in full bloom with beautiful shape and color, I see it, I feel it, I experience it in the way you were discussing. But as soon as I point it out to the person I'm walking it, I suddenly become separated and lose that beauty and experience.
Yeah,
and
yes.
I never understood it. I never realized it before. But thank you so much. I now understand it.
Yeah, well, that's great. I used to take a regular walk with a friend of mine who was a scientist, MD, and she knew the name of every plant and its phylum and, you know, its seasonality and so forth. And I used to, you know, we'd be walking in a field of wildflowers in the spring, and and she would be telling me the names of everything. And I would just sometimes like, could we just see them? You know? And it's what you're talking about. Now, there was someone else who's over here on my screen. Yes, you.
Hey, Dorothy, this is Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Thank you. That was really an interesting exercise. I was looking at a painting that I bought from an artist at a street fair a number of years ago. And when I first started contemplating it, I was thinking about that and how much it means to me and the interaction and, you know, everything that unfolded sort of taking me back. But when we got to that point where you said just be the seeing, all of that fell away. It was just the beauty of the object or, you know, the colors. That's all I was taking in. So that shift was really meaningful.
That's great. And I myself am very engaged, we might say, with beauty as a way that this mystery expresses itself, you know. And I think that when the infinite touches our senses, that's when we see beauty, you know. And it could be different for each one of us, of course, depending on how we're wired. But yeah, there's something that begins to transform a little bit, you know, when you're just seeing in this concentrated way. And sometimes also if you begin to just focus your seeing on one object, like the other day I was taking this walk, it was the day before the one with the little Zazen boy, but there was a hummingbird, and I love hummingbirds, and you know, it just perched on a branch right in front of me. And so I just stopped, and I just was doing this kind of seeing of the hummingbird, and it was so the way it was sitting in the tree, it looked very dull. It was in a brownish gray coat and nothing too remarkable. And then every now and then it would turn its head to the sun. And you know how this bright red crown of the head, bright red, iridescent red breast of this bird. And then it would turn back. And so there was just that sense of the shimmering color and then the shift and shift. But then the scene grew bigger. And I just mentioned it because it can be your experience as well, where then it's not just about this object. It was the sky behind the tree itself, the other birds that were flying in the sky and so forth. So that, you know, the focus here can also expand to a more global way of looking, a global way of seeing. And in this koan I was speaking about, part of the commentary said, look, the bright shining sun lights up the sky. Listen, the pure whispering wind circles this great earth. Enter here. You see, because any moment or any form, and it could be a feeling form that you don't even particularly like. You might be feeling fear or anxiety, but any moment can be the portal. Enter here any moment when we see from the being that knows its intimate experience. You know, it can be a portal to our true nature. And then the capping verse for this koan was, in the depths of stillness, all words melt away, clouds disperse, and it vividly appears before you. So we can't demand that we see this way. We can't conjure it up. But we can be open, you know, to receive these moments of revelation, you know, like you did with the succulents. You know, they were just revealing themselves, you know, and what you were awake to gave them reality. Do you know? I mean, it wasn't two at that point. There's a poem, I think I have time for a couple more things. There's a poem I wanted to share with you by Shabastari, who was a Persian poet, contemporary of Rumi. And it's called The Mirror of This World. Every particle of the world is a mirror. In each atom lies the blazing light of a thousand suns. Cleave the heart of a raindrop, 100 pure oceans will flow forth. Look closely at a grain of sand, the seed of 1,000 beings can be seen. The foot of an ant is larger than an elephant. In essence, a drop of water is no different than the Nile. In the heart of a barley corn lies the fruit of 100 harvests. Within the pulp of a millet seed, an entire universe can be found. In the wing of a fly, an ocean of wonder. In the pupil of an eye, an endless heaven. Though the inner chamber of the heart is small, the Lord of both worlds gladly makes his home there. And this is a seeing from wholeness. You know, seeing the interconnection of everything. It's kind of like you've probably heard of the net of Indra. You know, this way of seeing the universe as this incredible net where the net comes together, there's a diamond, and that diamond is each individual form. And it reflects and has within it every other diamond. And anytime one diamond moves, the whole net moves. It's that sense of interconnection. It's that sense of mutual causation, of mutual arising, codependent arising, if you want to use terms. But, you know, we don't have to use terms to begin to get the feel of this interconnection and interpenetration that allows us to actually see the world in a way that transforms our experience of it. So the other koan that I wanted to share, one of my favorites, is by Xuan Sha. However, I don't know my Chinese pronunciation, but it's the saying that the entire world of the 10 directions is one bright pearl. The entire world of the 10 directions is one bright pearl. And Zen Master Dogen spoke about this as well. He said, one bright pearl expresses reality. It contains the inexhaustible past, existing throughout time and arriving in the present. Presently, there is a body and mind. They are one bright pearl. The stalk of grass, a tree, the mountains and rivers of this world are not only themselves, they are one bright pearl. So everything has its own individuality and is also one bright pearl. And even when we experience pain and difficulty and challenge and delusions, one bright pearl. And in this koan, the Zen master says this to his student, and you know, he says, well, what meaning do you make of this? And the student says to the Zen master, what meaning do you make of this? And he says, why does there have to be a meaning? The entire world in all the 10 directions is one bright pearl. So the next day, the Zen master asks his student the same question, and the student just parrots back what the teacher has said. Just same exact words. What meaning do we need to make? But of course, the Zen master knew it wasn't coming from what was new and fresh and true in the student. So he said something like, you know, these Zen masters, oh, you are living in the cave of demons in the Black Mountain. You know, they always say, oh, you're in the cave of demons in the Black Mountain. The whole idea of delusion was portrayed as being in the cave of demons in the Black Mountain. But as this koan unfolds in its commentary, it also says, you should understand that even in the cave of demons on the Black Mountain, the one bright pearl's radiance is not diminished. And when you know that, not as some idea, but then you feel free because you're not judging something as other than one bright pearl, even though you can't really say what is one bright pearl. But you feel it. You feel it. You feel the wholeness of being in all of its imperfections from the perspective of our conditioned mind. This is not a perfect world by any stretch of the imagination. Just look at what's happening in Ukraine and the heartache that it brings just to watch and so forth and so on. But there's something that's perfectly whole. And the wholeness of being isn't just the good, the beautiful, and the true, is it? It's also the yin and yang, the dark and the light, constantly flowing into and out of. Because in duality, everything has its opposite as part of its own definition. There's no up without down. There's no health without illness. There's no enlightenment without delusion, and so forth and so on. But what if all of those separate ideas, even for moments, just collapse? And then what's here? And how does this one respond? And what is it like to live more and more from this openness that we've been talking about and hopefully experiencing just a bit more? How does that, that's open and empty of definition, empty of self, how does it view your own body, your own mind, your own experience? What's its experience? If you were to look at your own life the way you might look at the succulents, you know, How would that be, and how would that be different than looking at it through conditioned mind that says, oh, I'm just this, and I'm that, and I'm not that, and I'm not good enough, and so forth and so on. I mean, you all know, and we all know, that the veil through which we see the world completely and utterly influences how we see it. You know, if we're seeing only through the intellect, then that's what we'll see. If we're seeing only through emotion, then that's all we'll see. If we're seeing through scarcity, the world is seen as being scarce. If we're seeing through greed or judgment or anger, it completely affects the experience, the appearance, you know, in the moment. But if we're seeing it through love, then we see love. And we're all, you know, those veils are constantly shifting and moving. But when you sit quietly, you can also see, we all do, and this is part of the ongoingness of living more and more from our awakened nature, you also see the places in yourself where you have held on to division, held on to something separate. Yes, that's all well and good that it's all one bright pearl, but not that. Not that guy, not this political party, not that, you know, politician. No, those are not one bright pearl. What is it like to imagine the wholeness of being? It doesn't mean we won't have our opinions and that we won't be moved toward peace if we are, or toward, you know, justice if we are, so forth and so on. But I think if we're living more and more from this openness, that it's an authentic way of living, that we're willing to be honest, first of all, with ourselves, and then with whomever we might be with as well. And it can feel, I mean, when you're seeing kind of into the vastness of the universe, it's great. I mean, it's a beautiful experience, you know. Oh my goodness, yes, it's all. But when that openness is operating in your body mind, it can feel vulnerable to be that open. And I recently watched it was called a comedy special from HBO. Maybe some of you have seen it. I think it's relatively new, called Rothaniel. Did any of you see that yet? No. Okay. Well, it started out as a man, Jared Carmichael, who apparently is a comedian. I'd never seen him before, but it was written up in the New York Times, so that's made me interested in watching it. But it started out with him telling jokes and people were laughing and so forth. But then it was just like, it just began to spiral into more and more and more honesty about all the secrets that he had kept in his life. Secrets about his family, secrets about being gay, secrets of hating his name, secrets of being a black gay man whose boyfriend was white. And that was a big to-do with some of his black friends, you know, that shouldn't have been his choice, and so forth and so on. But he said it was really a remarkably open and vulnerable expression in that hour that really felt like it, for me anyway, watching it and just feeling compassion for these things that he was clearly uncomfortable with sharing, you could tell. And yet he said, you know, I've lived my whole life, you know, trying to be somebody and trying to live a lie and trying to, and I'm sure all of us can relate in some ways. You know, I've spent my whole life living these lies and holding myself to be somebody I'm not. And he said, I decided to try something different. And that was, I decided to just be truthful. And I just thought that's an authentic moment coming from something that is, if it's anything, is authentic, our life. You know, it's, if it's lived more and more from this dimension we're pointing to, it's going to feel authentic and real. So we have a little bit of time before we end, and I'd love to hear anything you'd like to share or ask or whatever on this morning.
Hi, Dorothy. Thank you for a wonderful talk. Can you hear me?
I can, but I can't see. Oh, here we go. You're in the room. Okay, hi. In the room. Fantastic. Yeah.
I just want to say, when you were guiding us in the exercise, when you said something, I can't remember the exact words, but basically, see from your most intimate place, that it really snapped for me into a very that those words really come as close to describing it as I can come up with. And it really is about intimacy with this inside of ourselves, being intimate, so intimate ultimately is to become, of course. But,
yes.
It is very, very intimate. Very intimate. It's not like abstraction.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dogen, one of Dogen's quotes that I love is he said, enlightenment is simply intimacy with all things. And that's what we're talking about. An awakened moment is a moment of that kind of intimacy that you were experiencing. That is an awakened moment. And of course, we all have lots of moments that don't feel so awakened, right? But when you know it's possible, then there's an opportunity there to stop or to slow down more often and really see. Yeah. Really see intimately with your whole body and mind, as Dogen would invite us to.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Okay, I've got a little hand on a square. Go ahead.
Hi, Dorothy. Thanks so much for your talk. My first introduction to you was like a year ago, and this past year I've looked at the Buddha Mountain Sangha on YouTube. I've really enjoyed and learned a lot from your talks. And you have a way of actually, there's a really strong drive in Zen tradition to not speak and not speak during meditation, and particularly when doing Zazen. And I really love that you do, or you really give a taste of your experience. And it's really enlightening for me as a participant to hear your guidance. And I really appreciate that. And it's, of all the meditation techniques I've looked at in different schools, you really speak to like sort of a ground zero of what it's all about. So I just really, really appreciate that. My question is this. You mentioned, or there's a mention in your bio about also working with Advaita. And I don't know much about Advaita. And maybe it's something you can't really talk about in one or two steps. But could you just give me a little taste of where that comes from? Is it a modern movement? Or anyway, thank you.
Yeah, sure. Advaita means not to. So okay. there's a tradition, many traditions come to the same realization. But Advaita really came, you know, early days came out of the Hindu tradition. And there are various Advaita masters. And the thing about Advaita that's beautiful, like Ramana Maharshi is one of those teachers of Advaita who taught primarily from silence and the silence of his being and the power of his seeing you. I mean, he died in 1950. His Mahasamadhi was April 14th. So, but the emphasis is so frequently on the absolute. You know, and when for myself, and this was a way that the path unfolded here was through Ramana Maharshi's invitation to self-inquiry. So it wasn't about sitting, who am I, who am I? It was just every day, who's sitting, who's looking, who's feeling, who's the, you know, that most meditation practices involve the assumption that there's a separate somebody, there's a separate meditator who's going to do the practice. Whereas this practice was one of inviting your whole mind to try to find its source. You know, it's like the backward step in Zen, you know, it's like to take the backward step. This is just another way of saying that, of coming into that question of who or what am I. But you get close enough in your looking to, it's like holding a candle up to the sun, it gets close enough, it melts. Do you know, the candle is not going to be able to see the sun. So this is sort of that experience, you might say, that some have, do you know, where you turn and you look and you can't go any further, you know? And you say, well, it's not working because I don't know. But if you stay with unknowing, something may just go, you know. Something may just melt, in the face of the mystery that we can't know as an object, you know, because it's what we are. So Advaita really focuses on those kind of moments. And you know, Zen does too in terms of awakening, not so much maybe as it's taught today often, but you know, certainly it has and it does over the years. But the problem with Advaita, particularly as it's taught these days, it leaves out the human. You know, we are this mystery. We are Buddha nature. We are, you know, true nature, the self. Ramana called it the self. Buddha called it no self. Same thing. But you can get stuck in emptiness. The Buddhists would say, you know that if you're stuck in emptiness, there's a stench of a smell of Zen. Do you know that somehow we're above everything? Do you know? But the human piece is what, you know, when it comes together, to me, is what's so important, because we live in human form. This is parading as a human being. You know, it's living, it's experiencing itself, you know, as you and me. So anyway, that doesn't do justice to Advaita, but Advaita is very much inviting, you know, the absolute perspective. And it comes, you know, there's this, I'll just say one more thing, and I know you want to have time to go around. But you know, there's a Hindu saying, the world is illusion, Brahman alone is real. And those two lines, Advaita takes a great look at. The third one, however, is often not paid much attention to, because the third line, the world is Brahman. You know, the world is illusion, Brahman alone is real, the world is Brahman. So that's where that, you know, coming together of sky and clouds, seeing the same essence, is a part of many, many traditions, Advaita being one, Zen being another, Christian mystics being another, and so forth and so on. Okay, I'm going to zip it up and let you guys do what you do here at the end, but it's been a pleasure to be with
you.
Thank you, and thanks so much for your attention.
Okay. Announcements. Anyone?
I'm the host for today. Please stay and partake in the snacks. There's water for hot tea, and there's also room temperature water. And if you have some of that, if you could put your cup in the dishwasher. I'll go around with the Donna bowl. As you know, Donna is the Pali word for generosity, I think. Right. And it helps us do the things we do, like the honorarium, the rent, the dinners that we hope to get back to at Larkin Street, and our quarterly newsletter. If there are any newcomers, like George, online, if you want to be on our mailing list, you can go to gatebuddhist.org and do that. And then some people, if you want to go to lunch with folks afterward, you can meet at the door around 12:30.
Thank you. Our speaker next week will be Ian Chalice. Ian Chalice teaches at Insight Community of the Desert, Palm Springs, where he's a founding member and past guiding teacher. He has sustained a committed practice since 2005 and was authorized to teach through Spirit Rock Meditation Center's Community Dharma Leader Program. He is also a qualified teacher of MBSR 2022. Will mark his fifth year teaching with our Irina Weissman and Leslie Booker for the annual Dharma Denya, Joshua Tree Queer Retreat. That's next week, and I'll be your facilitator again. Any more announcements? Jim?
Yes. I'd like to recommend a brilliant book by Colin McCann, who wrote Let the Great World Spin. I think you had the great good fortune to have that before. This book is called Paragon, which is a Greek word for an infinitely faceted situation. And it pursues the experience of an Israeli and Palestinian, two fathers, both of whom lost young daughters to the violence
in that region. And it's unlike anything I've ever read. It's so poetic and moving and full of deep-seated compassion, and I recommend it. It's called A Paragon.
Thank you. Anyone else? And we can gather for the dedication there.
By the power and truth of this practice, may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all be free from sorrow and the causes of sorrow. May all never be separated from the sacred happiness, which is without sorrow. And may all live in equanimity, without too much attachment or too much aversion, believing in the equality of all that lives.
Thank you, George. Thank you, Misha. Thank you, Dorothy. Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you, Dorothy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dorothy.
Thank you, Dorothy. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.